Other People's Flowers is a podcast for stories, poetry, and essays. Thank you for listening.
This week's work comes from Adreo Sen. Adreo Sen is currently a PhD student at the University at Albany. He has been published in the Southampton Review, The Little Magazine, Dance Macabre, and Quail Bell. Anjali. When we danced in each other's dreams, when my pain was yours and your joy brightened my skies, I would run to you the moment I woke up. Run out of my bedroom, down the stairs, past the living room where my father sat reading and my mother frowning, and into the kitchen. You would smile at me, standing behind your busy mother, one hand on her back in cheeky proprietorship, and I would jump up and down. Your mother's bangled arms would parcel flatbread soaked in butter and sugar into our mouths, me taking precedence, and then you would pull me by the hand, and we would set off on our adventures. In the summer, when the heavy air was a melancholy second skin paralysing my dreams, we would roam the garden that seemed then a wild eternity. The humidity didn't bother you. Your thick red ribbon braid swinging, you would climb up the mango and coconut trees. When I was younger, I would follow you up the trunk and collapse next to you on one of the branches. But as I grew older, fear took over me. You would laugh at me, balanced precariously high above me, the sunlight washing your face of your mother's scolding, but your laughter was always kind. I would try to make up for my failure, to be your consort by telling you stories. The garden connected so easily with the books I read then. Sometimes I thought it was the same garden Wolf prowled through, that stilled Stevenson to fancy that Edith Nesbit's children must have roamed. Once I told you, thinking of the secret garden, seated at the foot of the tamarind. A wise and beautiful woman sat on the branches through the long cold evenings, laughing and reading, her husband looking up at her at all the joy he had in the world. I wanted then to be that woman. I would write my poems on my lofty perch, smiling down every now and then at the dark man below me. My Heathcliff, my Rochester. Stupid, you would giggle. When I told you this, pinching my elbow, you are a boy. You don't wear silly, silly dresses. But I wanted to be someone's impossible dream, a lingering scent of saffron and cardamom. Though I never told you, my commander in all things, my favourite days were the days it rained, sitting in the kitchen a plate of warm fritters between us, their sad-eyed author, your mother, rolling the evening flatbread behind you, pausing every now and then to rumple your hair in inarticulate affection, we would play house. We will have 5 rooms, you would tell me. Each one will have an air conditioner. There will be steel cupboards in each room. I will have 3 servants, and my husband will love me very much. Her flights of fancy were tempered by her mother's growl. Ma didn't approve of the magnitude of her daughter's dreams. I will love you very much, I told her once, licking a stray crumb off her nose. Not you, stupid, she giggled. Shah Rukh Khan. Shah Rukh Khan was the leading Bollywood actor through our growing up years, his trademark a certain limited range of mannerisms. But I didn't begrudge you your Shah Rukh Khan. You could have everything you wanted, my quicksilver friend, whose mouth, overflowing when she bit avidly into a mango, told me that there was much to the world beyond books. And whom will you marry? You crowed at me. Wait, I know, that stupid bookish friend of yours, stupid Caviar. Caviar was my classmate. She would come over every now and then, and we would sit next to my mother and sip tea and talk eruditely about Tintin and Asterix and the adventures of the Famous Five. A hardy group of children, tumbling about England's seemingly inexhaustible greenery. My mother, and your mother reinforced this by slapping you, would not allow you to sit with us, so you would stand in the doorway and make faces at me, poking your fingers into your nose. But you wouldn't have enjoyed sitting with us. You would have had to sit on the floor. Mummy, enlightened despot though she was, had fixed views on the right conduct of domestic servants. No, I told you, tracing the floor with my oily finger, I want to marry you. Your mother smiled at me. I could imagine waiting in an elegant drawing room for you to come back from your adventures, pungent in that acrid, stale onion way you so often were, sweaty and glorious, and I would rise to kiss you, and you would bound over to me and kiss me, and kiss me, and kiss me. But I'm spoken for, you said, drumming your haunches. And so I said, I will marry Sanjay Dutt. Sanjay Dutt, adorably scruffy, was known for his shenanigans on and off screen. I imagined his slippery forest of stubbled promise against my cheek. Your mother looked blankly at me, for a moment like one of the blank-faced princess dolls I would collect annually from the village fair, beauty sheathed in red and green. You looked at me kindly. No, no, you said. After an eternity, I spent languorously poised on the confession. I know, you will marry Britney Spears. We were nine then, and you had begun to dance to her music, initially imitating the Mukherjee twins who live next door, the lyrics you didn't understand ingrained in you through the Walkman I smuggled over to you when your mother and mine was busy. If I had known it, I would have seen in your laughing grace as you danced to and from me in the garden those days, the quiet and cherished sadness Indian women learn too soon. But how could I know? I couldn't even read myself. Sometimes I wanted to be a bosom in yellow and red rushed in someone's arms. At other times, I told myself I would be the one crushing the bosom. Maybe, I said. Definitely, you chortled, punching me. Only keep my sister Brittany in line, you know. Not too much dancing. Hit her every now and then, or she'll float off somewhere else. There were days your mother's silence was sadder than usual. Days she sagged and pressed one hand against her forearm. Her husband, her friend, her companion through life, pursued his withdrawing dreams through the murky brown of cheap rum. He is who he is, your mother would tell me. These were the days my mother spoke about getting another maid. Listen, she would tell my father. When a Bengali woman says listen, she is calling her husband. I do so much for her. Why doesn't she show her gratitude, sulking about the place she is? And my father would grunt, his eyes fixed on the morning's op-ed. When I was home last, your mother's monthly salary was still less than the cost of a meal at the Hilton we frequented. When I was 12, I went to boarding school. I stayed there for 6 years. I should have been unhappy at boarding school, solitary and inward as I was. But my seniors and form mates, unable to penetrate my mumbling difference, resigned themselves to my unkempt presence on their periphery. And since depression embraced me in my first year at school, mania began to assault me with frantic, drunken kisses when I was 15. They often saved me from myself without knowing it. Ours was a boys-only school, where conversation was laden with fucks, but they tacitly condoned the cross-dressing I was convinced I was doing in secret. And when I first cut myself in a bathroom stall, my arms shuddering violently, no one yelled at me in disgust, or slapped me across the head as I thought they would when I was discovered. A senior I pined for, whose tired eyes I longed to kiss, dressed my wound and placed a soft palm on my forehead. But when I came home on break, I couldn't allay the fever in my brain, my thousand exploding thoughts, my deep plunges into despair and all too brief ascents into dazzling immortality to your steady cheerfulness. I was becoming a ghost, becoming convinced I had nothing in common with the world that would only pick at my scabs if I came up for air from the daydreams I danced in, my head buried in a book of convincing heaviness. You didn't seem to mind. You were working for us by then, unflappable despite my mother's constant criticism of your work, your dashing clothes in vibrant yellow and pink, your habit of singing the latest film numbers, of you essentially. So confident were you in who you were that I never realized that being you was a constant struggle in itself. I never learned to be me. You would ruffle my hair as I daydreamed, replaced one untouched cup of tea with another, and so I never thought to take you by your slim wrists and lead you into the paradise I was allowed to stumble my way through. A welcomed outsider, a paradise peopled by warrior women, fierce soldiers, mystics, angels, visionaries, and a female god who was only powerful if you believed in her. Maybe it would have helped. Maybe you needed to escape. Your mother was beginning to, sitting cross-legged on the kitchen floor at the close of work, mumbling to herself, staring into the endless green fields she'd known in her childhood and will one day return to match her feet to the thunderous dance of long-lost friends. When I was 18, I was offered a place at an American university. Sick of my mother's scolding and her constant attempts to find me in the wilderness I'd lost myself in, sick of my father's absences, I looked forward eagerly to be gone. I thought I would escape myself, but I was carrying me with me. You decided to treat me out of the salary that cost my mother less than my new Nikes. You took me to a shack on the riverfront. I watched you guzzle down fried prawns, rubbing your mouth between gulps with the hand you'd hennaed for the occasion. You thought I was sad. What's wrong? You asked, and then your face darkened. Not good enough for you, my prince, you sneered. You often picked a fight, then, when Mummy wasn't around. But I didn't realise you were unhappy. I wasn't unhappy, at least not the way you thought I was. Looking around me at the simply dressed men and women speaking their love to each other in the precious shorthand of a thousand little gestures, I realised that there was a whole world I'd never lived in, and you before me, a slim, bright-eyed, gaily clad inhabitant of that world, was so beautiful in a way I'd never be. And I had never realised it till then, never known you to be what you had long been, a woman. I didn't return home for 4 years, but I didn't become a woman. I never became Melanie Wilkes, never became Little Dorrit, never became Esther Summerson. I became what I was destined to become, a ghost. I never wrote to you or spoke to you on the phone. I thought you were happy that some Shah Rukh Khan, grounded by his work, a plumber or an electrician, a prince in disguise, only in that he revealed his aching gentleness at night, had swept you off your feet. And that when I next saw you, I would return to life when you smiled. When I asked for you, Mummy told me your mother had married you off to the man who ironed clothes for the neighbourhood. He was a business owner, so this was a step up in the world for you. He was a man who never smiled, who thumped his bundles of clothes with malevolence, whose gimlet-eyed mother sat by his side as he worked, glaring at the woman who passed by. Every now and then, she would slam her walking stick into the pavement. You had run away, Mummy told me, run away, ungrateful little slut. Your husband was in no rush for you to bear him children. And I knew your smile had broken. And I knew your eyes had been glazed with your mother's sorrow. And I knew your feet had lost the sweet music that is the swaying lilt of a song that can count all the stars in the sky. But I also knew that one day a child, quiet and serious, would nestle into your softness, and that with a laughter mixed with tears, you would lead him out of the sorrow and despair that is all I have. When I come home on increasing shorter visits, I sit with your mother in the kitchen. We ease into each other's silences and follow each other's dreams into endless green fields, where a laughing girl with red ribbon braids dances her welcome. Sometimes your mother calls me daughter. I have always called her Ma.
Thank you for listening to Other People's Flowers. Other People's Flowers is produced and edited by Hugo Gibson and Chris Kamonvutitam. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. If you'd like to have your work featured on the program, please visit otherpeoplesflowers.com to see our submission guideline. Thank you.